We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming into the program our friend, the talented writer, Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
We are just living the dream here, doing what we do, Bangor, Maine Radio.
Yeah, hey, how do I get hooked up with one of those snazzy downtown shirts so I can represent in the monument?
Because you're just going to rot it right out. You'll sweat through that thing in about 3 minutes.
It's not high grade, but top quality, come on.
It is, but yeah, you're working on industrial-grade perspiration there that would destroy the spacesuit that Neil Armstrong wore.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. You're giving ammunition to my little friend Emma, who's always complaining about my workout clothes. So I sort of stepped into that. And these days, you might not want me representing inside the monument anyway with some of the trouble I've had with park rangers. But if you have a pair, that'd be great.
Well, we'll get you. We'll get you. Sure. What size do you think you wear? You're a lean, mean fighting machine.
Yeah, I like to rock the large, hard rock. And you know how it is when you can shave off one of those sizes and squeeze into that, feel good.
we'll take care of you. We got you covered there.
All right, man. Thanks.
All right, we have a lot of things we want to cover this week, but let's start with the news over the weekend, the retirement of Andrew Luck that spawned all kinds of reactions from people. First of all, why people so upset that Luck decided to retire is beyond me.
I think it opens up an interesting discussion on the term you used, manhood, which I saw on the Twitter there. And I understand people being upset with him retiring, but not for the reasons that they are upset. The people who are upset are essentially breaking down into the Neanderthal camp and the troglodyte camp. And in one side, you have people saying, oh, no, what's going to become of our franchise now? And that's a laundry issue. Those are the Colts fans. And you have other people saying the weakness thing, that he is not masculine enough almost. There's not enough peace mode. He wants to do these other things, and he didn't have the time for these other things. And I myself call hogwash, really, on some of the reasons that he has given. I was not surprised by this announcement at all. I thought it was exactly in keeping with the person I watched on a football field, somebody who did not progress from year to year, who did not seem that committed in evolving their game. And in my view, when you're like that in one area, you tend to be that way in other aspects of your life. And I would follow him with interest, and I would listen to him speak in press conferences and all that, and I wouldn't hear somebody particularly articulate. And normally, when somebody reads a lot or they read a lot as a kid, they command language very well. I sensed somebody, though, who could be beaten, who wasn't going to be competing, not just at football, but at many things in life. And I've heard that he wants to have more time to read, and I've been thinking about that, because I'm not really a great person to have that argument with, given what I do and how much of what I do, which is a matter of public record, and I have the time to read and to mentor a child, to do lots of things. And if you're an NFL player, you're working essentially 5 months out of the year. Now, you're training the rest of the year, of course, but how many hours of that is a day? I don't think now all of a sudden Gogol and Stendhal are going to be making inroads into this man's time and this man's life. I think he wants to do nothing, and he has the money to live a life of leisure, and that's exactly in keeping with the guy that I watched as an athlete.
Did you feel the same way about Gronkowski when he walked away?
I didn't feel the same way about Gronkowski, because I saw somebody who was committed to improving all the time. I saw somebody who was steeped in drive. It's what I see with what I saw with David Ortiz that I don't see with Mookie Betts. Baseball scouts will talk about something. They don't do this anymore because I guess it's frowned upon. But they used to talk about something called he has the good faith. And it's just this clear look of vision in the eyes. And that's not all I saw with Gronkowski. I saw somebody who was not the happy-go-lucky meathead moron that people tried to portray him as. That he was actually astute, that he could turn a phrase, that he was clever. And he was somebody who it meant a lot to, clearly. And he worked. And his body broke down in a way that I don't think an NFL quarterback's body breaks down. And Luck didn't accredit this to his physicality. It was the mental side of things for him. I think Gronkowski was a broken man physically when he got to the age he got to. And you watch some of those hits, and it's understandable. And I know that Luck had a porous offensive line, but Gronkowski would come back each year and he'd have something different. He'd have something better. He was a guy who needed to win, and they only won this past year because he was able to put his ego aside and become the best blocking tight end I'd seen in a generation, probably. He became as adroit at blocking as he was as a downfield threat. So they were two completely different personas, personalities, mindsets to me. And I know somebody got in trouble recently. I don't know their name for alleging that this was typical millennial behavior with Luck. And while that's kind of a lazy argument to make, it's a Bramidic argument to make, I think there was a lot of quit in that dog. And I don't think it's limited to sports.
Yes, and I can agree with you on that. There's a difference, and maybe it's just semantics. There's a difference between not having the same commitment, not perhaps loving the game as much as others do, but it this whole silly barstool era nonsense about testicular fortitude and manhood and this and that, I think it's just silly.
It's people who leave high school and they go off into the adult world, and the best thing that ever happened to them that they'll talk about at the first opportunity is that year that they went state and they were a backup offensive lineman. That's the person. Those are the people doing the manhood stuff. And I don't even really understand what manhood means. I understood it in the context of watching Bonanza and No Women Folk Were on the Ponderosa. But I think of myself as someone who can strap it on and do whatever with anyone. I played hockey. I look tough, I would imagine. People have always found me intimidating. But there I am at the ballet, a guy on his own in his early 40s crying to Onegin. What's manhood and what's not manhood? To me, there's just peoplehood. And there is being comfortable in your own skin and owning that. Because when I make an admission like that, or if I tell people here on the radio, I'm struggling with things, I had a panic attack earlier today, whatever it might be, people listening aren't saying, oh, that guy's weak. They're thinking, wow, that's impressive. I'm going through some stuff, too, and he's able to just own it, and I should be able to do that. And I feel kind of connected to that guy, even though I don't know that guy. So I never understand, really, even if I believe that there are two principal genres, I don't understand notions of this is more masculine, this is more feminine. I think things, if we evolve, we're just people who embrace a totality.
Well, that's a nice transition into the comments, I guess, originally made from, was it Lara Spencer from Good Morning America, making fun of, I don't follow the royals, whatever prince is taking ballet lessons. And again, these of what men do and what women do at any age.
Yes, and I don't know the names, and it's not something that's healthy for me to know the names. I don't need to know the names either of the royals. To me, royalty is not that far afield of eugenics. I find it deeply disturbing that because you emanated from somebody's appendage, you are elevated to this status in life. It goes against everything I believe in. And the woman on Good Morning America, I don't know her name either. But recently I was on a dating app and a woman saw me in a Boston ballet shirt. And she asked me, this was great, speaking of what size do you wear? This is nice. You like this. She said, oh, were you a ballet dancer? I'm like, yes, sure. Now, I didn't like it. I had to move on quickly thereafter. But that was something I would have loved to have done ballet when I was a kid. I was playing hockey. I was good enough at it to be recruited for top Division I schools. And I just didn't know enough about it at the time. But it's something that I never would have been hesitant to do. And it's not like I was Mr. Popularity or anything at any time in my life as a kid. I just don't understand also that the ballet community after was saying it's okay now. This was equally to me. It's okay now to be into the ballet. It's the 21st century. It's like, when was it not okay?
Right,
like,
right.
1982, it was okay. And if you think about ballet dancers, it's like some few news flashes with ballet dancers. They're stronger than you.
Yes.
So much stronger than you. They are so much more athletic than you. They're more athletic than your favorite sports manly heroes, men, women, and they have a deep toehold in the arts. they are beating you on the art front and on the athletics front. I mean, I'm like on the totem pole of these things. They're the people who you're like, oh, wow, those are the cool kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like the, and I didn't understand why that community was making these allowances. Like, it was always badass. I mean, do you know how strong you have to be a ballet dancer? It's ridiculous. It's like you talk about a spider and the spider's web and the tensile strength and everything. Ballet dancers are the human incarnate version of that spider's web, but they're more flexible too. I didn't understand any of that and how it became, again, this debate about gender. It's not a gender thing. I would have loved to have danced ballet, and I love going to ballet, and I love when I can write about ballet and share ballet with people, because me, big hockey guy who comes on your air to talk about what's going to happen in the NHL playoffs, they're not that dissimilar, ballet and hockey. And I would imagine that a lot of athletes who play sports like hockey would benefit from ballet. There probably are a bunch who actually do ballet.
I don't doubt it for a minute. Colin Fleming with us here on Downtown. Let's also recognize an anniversary of a film that it holds up awfully well given the times it was produced. 55 years ago, The Beatles, A Hard Day's Night. You weren't alive, of course, when it was released, but it still had a large impact on you.
It did. It definitely did. And I can pinpoint when the precise moment of that impact germination was. I was in an eighth grade, it's called Music Lab. It sounds like it's this mashup of like Einsteinian science and crazy futuristic music stuff. But it was just you sitting in this room with this guy who was probably a failed musician who did not want to be there because he was always pulling in the TV. I don't know if they still do that, but that's how it was back then. And sticks in this video cassette of A Hard Day's Night. And that sequence when they are at the theater and all of these low angles and tight corridors, which you also get early in the film with the train sequences, which are wonderful. And then they throw open the door at the top of that fire escape. And Ringo Starr says, "We're out." And the camera shoots up from beneath. So you're looking through the grill up at them as their Beatle boots come pattering down this fire escape. And Can't Buy Me Love, and I am convinced that it's louder in this incarnation than on any stereo it's ever been on, is just cranking. And they're just fooling around in the field and gamboling and everything. But I saw that, and I thought to myself, you know what, Colin? These things that you've been doing with this writing and all of that, there really isn't anything you can't do. You can do this, and you can do that. You can do wet, and you can do dry. You can do day, and you can do night. This is just what artistic freedom means. Now, I read more into that than actually happening in the scene, but that's what it represented to me. It was the codification of all of those things, and that's why I went on this journey, which I was going to go on anyway, where you're writing about the ballet, and you're writing about hockey, and you're writing the short story, and you're writing the blog, and you're writing the memoir, because it just was a world opening up to me where there was no can't. Everything was why not.
I want to talk more about it with you. We're pressed today. We're juggling some guests around, but I want to continue, if we can, maybe next time, a conversation about that movie and how important that was. Was it perhaps at the time even more important than the music itself in creating that image of the Beatles here in America?
Yeah, somebody's hit upon an interesting little thesis. Hard rock. Like, I'll have to mow.
All right, send me your address. Large downtown right. Shirt waiting to be saturated with your essence.
Oh, yeah. Let's get it done. All right, buddy.
Thanks, Colin. Colin Fleming. Check him out at ColinFlemingLit.com.